Welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, your host, and we're happy to have you with us today answering all of your financial questions. If you have one right now that's just been on your mind, you can call 1-888-1-888-6-ADVICE and email questions at yourmoney.com, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But now, for the next hour or so, you can call 651-461-9226. Here is Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning.
Hi, Peg. Hi, Susie Jones. Hey, Susie and listeners and Peg. A lot of people see surveys out there. This company did this research. Mm-hmm. This company polled this many people and found this. Well, Wealth Enhancement Group actually decided we would do some of our own research. Excuse me. So Wealth Enhancement Group did a lifestyle survey. We polled, I think, Peg, it was 1,000 people. And today we're going to talk about some of the results of this survey and maybe some of the opportunities that people can have if they have concerns about some of these things. But again, it's focusing on retirement. And Peg, as you looked over the results of the survey, what kind of stood out or what jumped off the page at you?
Yeah, one of the things I want to clarify right away is that the 1,000 people were not necessarily Wealth Enhancement Group clients. So this was just a national survey. We hired a hoity-toity firm, research firm, to do it. So I found it fascinating. And one of the things that I think that really stuck out with me is this constant fear of inflation. And, you know, people are worried about these inflationary times that we have, you know, when it comes to food and energy, and we can go into that. But the fact that they feel that they have to delay their retirement by 8 years, which is a long time. So that was kind of a highlight for me. And then, you know, are people kind of waiting and wondering if they're going to get an inheritance? That's just on people's minds. Like, are they going to get a windfall one day that's going to jump them into a category to feel comfortable? So today we'll kind of walk through the key findings of this Wealth Enhancement Group Retirement Life Lifestyle Survey. And then before we're done today, we're actually going to provide the listeners today access to this survey. So there's a lot more detail, Bruce, than you and I are going to talk about today. Bruce?
Yeah, you know, and I agree with you. Kind of the same things jumped out at me. The other one, I guess, that you didn't mention, and we've talked about it a lot on this show, but we'll talk about it some more again today, is people freak out during presidential election years. That came through again loud and clear in the survey. And I think, Peg, it's just, you know, it's just human nature. No matter how many times you and I say, don't worry about elections, the statistical data doesn't give us any cause for concern, and we can provide all kinds of statistical data. I just think some people are just going to be nervous no matter what we say, but we'll go into that one a little bit too. But where do you want to start? You want to talk about inflation?
Well, yeah. So there's actually a couple different key findings. So let's start with inflation. Persistent inflation, you know, 39% and rising costs, 37% were cited by the people that responded to this survey. And it's one of the top reasons that they doubt that they're going to be able to save enough for a comfortable retirement. Now, I'd like to just throw in here that, you know, we hear on the news kind of, I don't know if we can call it price gouging, but because of AI, right, it so quickly can say, oh, there's so many more people looking for this. This is what affects me. So if I want to get an airline ticket, this is where I've seen a huge impact. AI is in there, and they're going, oh, there's all sorts of people that want to go to the same place at the same time. So the prices just go up, like, overnight. And we've had some of that in the past, but that's just an example of how quick it can change based on, you know, people that are on the Internet trying to figure things out. And in fact, the core inflation, a lot of the headlines say, hey, Fed, you did a great job getting down to 3% here, and they've been working for years during COVID and after COVID and trying to figure out how do we get that inflation down. The Fed has targeted 2%, but yet we're not feeling it. I don't think we're all feeling it that it has come down. So the problem with this food and energy prices, they've really remained high. And then you and I, Bruce, have talked on the phone on this radio show before where rent and housing expenses are really high, and they're trying to build places for all these people to live, but it's difficult. And the fact that these prices are going up and it's impacting just millions of people, percentage-wise, they felt very negative about their outlook for retirement. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, we've said this on the show before, and it bears repeating. Inflation is real. It's not, if we had a lot of years where inflation was very low and people didn't notice it and people didn't feel it, and it's because their increase in wages was actually exceeding the very low rate of inflation. So they were able to buy gas and groceries, and they didn't feel the strain that they felt the last 3 years or so. And again, we've talked about this on the show. A lot of this was, a lot of this, as you mentioned, Peg, is technology, AI, and other technological things. But it was also somewhat of a natural expectation coming out of the global pandemic that supply was not going to be able to keep up with demand, which drove up prices. And the other thing about inflation, again, the Fed can talk about, and by the way, we would be remiss if we didn't mention, during the week, I think on Wednesday, the Fed did cut the Fed funds rate by 0.5%. Speculation, prevailing wisdom thought it would be 0.25%, but they actually cut it 0.5%. And the good news, and I'm deviating or taking a little bit of a detour here because I know we're talking about inflation, but the good news is there were so many people for so long predicting that we were going to go into a recession and not have a soft landing, and it appears we're having a soft landing, and it appears, despite these inflation concerns, which are not unfounded, that overall the economy is really strong. Consumer wages are going up. Inflation is coming down. GDP is good. Unemployment is low, and so on. In fact, there was just an article in the Minnesota Star Tribune during the week that in the state of Minnesota, wages are increasing far faster than the rate of inflation, and I think that's true nationally. So, but the thing about inflation, Peg, is you can say it slowed down to 3%, but again, that doesn't mean prices are dropping. It just means they're not increasing as fast as they were. And those price increases that we experienced 2 years ago and 3 years ago, those prices are still there. So a basket of goods and services that maybe cost $100 for a consumer 3 years ago today costs maybe $140. And that is impactful. That I'm not insensitive to that. But to many people that I've been talking to about this, I also point out it's a short-term cash flow issue. But in terms of your retirement, look at what's happened to your retirement plan or your 401k in the last 3 years. It's also probably because of the stock market's at an all-time high, you probably have 40% more in your retirement plan. So this idea that inflation is going to delay retirement by 8 years, I know that's what people said in their survey. I don't think that's realistic. I think that's people that are overreacting or over-alarmist about the impact of inflation. And again, I don't want to be insensitive to it. I know this is a real thing at the kitchen table for families. But again, look at your 401k plan the last 3 years and how much that's grown to offset the short-term rising costs that you've had for gas and groceries. Peg?
Yeah, so one of the things that we say on the show often is there's nothing that we can directly control about what's happening there. I think one of the stats, and people are not going to like hearing this, but it happens to be a time frame when the food supply chain is coming from four companies. I mean, four big companies. And when it comes to gas, there's two-thirds of the energy is being produced by six global corporations. That actually is interesting in that you know, it always narrows down to these big companies, but then lots of spin-offs happen. And then, Bruce, would you agree, over our entire tenure of doing this job, it seems like, okay, everybody buys up all the little companies, and then they work on, you know, spinning off again. But what we say is there is nothing that we can directly control, but we need to focus on what we can control. Some people will look at these stats on this survey, and they're going to get sad about it. But there's things that you can control. Number one, you can control your investment portfolio. Bruce, I'm glad that you brought up that our statements are higher than they've been, to the point where people are saying, ooh, should I diversify more? I mean, are you appropriately diversified? And does it include asset classes that outpace inflation? So historically, I can't tell you about the future, but common stocks, commodities, inflation protection, securities, things that are sensitive to inflation, you have to have those in your portfolio, in my opinion. And then the only other thing you can really control is cutting your spending, plan to work longer, or add income, which a lot of our clients have been doing, is through side hustle, getting a little add-on job, you know, to make ends meet or feel more confident about their future. So one of the things, Bruce, is I mentioned right away in the beginning about a financial windfall. So in this survey, it's kind of interesting, more than one in five Americans, 20%, have received an inheritance at some point in their lives based on 2022, and the average inheritance was $58,000. So for those lucky few, know that get something, a lot of times they're not expecting it. I'm measuring that on our clients. We don't put inheritances in the financial plans normally unless the client kind of insists that we do. Folks at the bottom of 50% of the earners inherit at half the national rate. So there's going to be people that are going to get an inheritance just by way of knowing that their parents were like super savers. And most of us, during this key takeaway of the survey was, most of us do not expect a massive windfall. So we have to do planning ourselves. Bruce?
Okay, I'm going to pick up the baton from where you just left it, and thank you. You just said we have to do planning ourselves. Peg, you know, one of the other things that came out of this is that people acknowledge that they may not be on track for retirement. They may not. Although, you know, a fairly high percent, 48% said they think they're doing everything right. That means that 52% know that maybe they could be doing more, should be doing better. And staggeringly to me, although intellectually, I guess I'm not surprised, I kind of knew the number, only 19% of those surveyed say they work with a financial advisor or meet with an advisor on a regular basis. And we've always said on this show, and again, we can be accused of being self-serving because we're financial advisors, but we know there's a mountain of statistical data out there that verifies that people that work with a financial advisor are more financially successful than those that aren't. Yet only 19% in this survey regularly meet with a financial advisor. And again, Google the Vanguard study on financial advisors. Google a company called Delbar, an independent research firm out of Chicago. I just did it this morning, just went financial advisors adding value, and there's a mountain of different articles and resources that verify what I'm saying. Yet people aren't using a financial advisor, and they're not, Peg, planning. They're not planning. And I think you know, people plan for a wedding or their kid's wedding. They plan if they're going to try to buy a house. They plan if they're going to do a renovation or finish the basement or add a deck. They plan if they're going to buy a car. Heck, they plan their vacation, but people are not planning for their retirement. It's not like you're going to wake up someday and say, oh, well, I'm 65. I think I'll just retire now. You have to plan for it. You have to do some things leading up to it to be smart about it. And people just overall are not doing enough planning to have the retirement that they want. It isn't just going to happen automatically.
Yeah, and I do feel a little sensitive about people out there that they want to be able to save. So they are saving maybe through their 401k and they feel like that's sufficient. That's going to be enough. But yet, you know, they still want to put food on the table. They they want to experience, you know, family experiences by going on a vacation or something like that. Most people don't have an emergency plan. These things came out of the survey. But not being able to afford everything in retirement, more than 3 in 5 respondents, 61%, have concerns about running out of money during retirement. A common perception, and it came out in this survey too, is that women are more worried than men. Women, 68%, and men, 55%. That's not any big news. A lot of people just, you know, they walk around just knowing, I haven't saved enough. But yet, time flies. All of a sudden, Bruce, we're 5 years later doing this show again. You know, it's 25 plus years. Time just flies. And so you have to make it part of your daily or weekly to-dos, is to look at things, make sure that you feel like you're on track. The key takeaway from this whole thing is most people have not used a calculator or other financial software, planning software, to figure out how much will they need to have to save to maintain the lifestyle that they want or the lifestyle that they envision. Bruce?
And again, you know, I'm going backwards a little bit here, but we were talking about inflation, and now we're talking about planning and having enough money to retire without having to worry about running out of money before you run out of breath. And it comes back again, though, where people feel that, I think, Peg, this conflict, because as they get older, they say, I can't afford risk anymore. I need to put my money in safe places. I can't put it in the stock market because the stock market can go down. But the problem with that is that they probably need a rate of return aggregately on all of their money. And yes, some money should be safe with no risk of principal. And we've always said that, and probably you need more of that the older you get or as you get into retirement. But you also still need exposure to stocks for the upside potential to give you an aggregate return on your money, that you get a high enough return that you don't spend all your money before you die, and at least a high enough return to keep pace with inflation. We spent a lot of time already talking about inflation, but if you put all your money in conservative, safe investments with a low return, there's no risk of principal, but you run the risk of losing purchasing power and blowing through all your money before you die. So again, this gets into one aspect of efficient retirement planning, is proper investing, proper asset allocation, and understanding, like you said, Peg, you need to know how much it's going to take when you get there to be able to make it last over a lifetime. And most people have never done that. Peg?
Yeah, and you have to, I'm a big goal person, so, and I'm a visionary, and not everybody is, but you have to have some goals that you're striving for. Just 48% of these respondents said they've done everything right. Now, what the definition of that is, I don't know, but they feel like they've done everything right to prepare for retirement. But there's so many, 36%, they're so behind their goals. Even people who have goals feel like they're behind on their goals, and 18% haven't even set any goals whatsoever. So, but to me, if you don't have a destination in mind, if you're not a visionary, you have to write something down. You have to, you know, look at it often. You have to take baby steps to say, okay, I did that. Sometimes, Bruce, people just try to look at the whole picture and they just feel deflated. Like they just don't even know what to do for the second steps. And it's amazing to me, we already talked about this on the show, but it's amazing to me how many people don't reach out for help. Is it you're embarrassed? I mean, I think part of that is, right? Because you don't really know whether you've saved enough, and you don't want somebody to judge you whether you're on track now. But I think you have to just open up to allowing someone to help you, even whether it's a coworker or a family member or contact a financial advisor. I think you're going to look back and say, wish I did if I didn't do it. So I think that's a good key takeaway here, Bruce.
Yeah, and I think I'll save Peg. We haven't talked about the 2024 presidential election yet. Maybe we'll finish with that in the second half of the show. I think we've only got a little over a minute left before we have to go to break. But just to pick up on your point, even if you're not going to engage an advisor, and I've asked myself that question a lot over the years. If, you know, maybe we should do a survey sometime of people that don't have a financial advisor and ask them why not, because I have a hard time understanding it. But I think some of the reasons, it might be what you said, they're embarrassed. I think procrastination plays into it. I think the fact that they haven't set a goal and they don't understand that maybe the advisor can help them set their goal. If you don't have a goal and you don't know where you're going to go or how do you know how to get there and you don't even think about it, I think all these things cost. Who do I know to trust? These are all probably reasons that people don't use an advisor, but these are all things that can be overcome. And again, I don't think any of those are a good reason not to use an advisor. But even if you don't use an advisor, at least have a goal and have a plan on how you want to get there, when you want to get there, when do you want to retire? What does retirement look like when you get there? Those are things everybody should be doing, even if they don't engage an advisor. Susie, I know we're due for a break. When we come back, we'll finish up this discussion and we'll get listeners involved.
That's right. Listeners want to be involved in this, and that number to call or text is 651-461-9226. I'll say it one more time. 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg about retirement or anything else, they'll take your calls after this short break. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb with Wealth Enhancement. And this is the half hour. We do like to open this up for your questions at 651-461-9226. And before we do that, Bruce and Peg, do you want to finish up before we start taking questions? Bruce?
Yeah, thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you for hanging in there, listeners. If you joined us late, we've been talking about a survey that Wealth Enhancement Group recently had conducted with a professional survey firm. And Peg, I know you want to direct them that if they want to get more specific information and get results, we'll help listeners do that. Some of the highlights we talked about in the first half of the show. Again, I don't want to try to repeat the whole first half, but 48% of the people surveyed think they've done everything right with regard to retirement. 36% feel behind. 18% haven't set any goals at all. Only 19% say they meet regularly with any kind of a financial advisor. They're concerned about inflation. We talked about that. People think they might have to delay their retirement for as much as 8 years because of inflation. Peg and I talked about that a lot in the first half of the show. And Peg, the one thing, the elephant in the room that we didn't talk about in the first half of the show, all eyes on the election. 8 in 10, 80% expect the election this year to impact their retirement plan. And 7 out of 10 people that are already retired think the results of the election are going to be impactful to their retirement. You want to talk about that? You want to tell people how they can get more information about this survey?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting about this election because the long-term optimism, despite election worries, 77% of Americans express positive emotions about their retirement. Inflation is a big deal. 48% have done everything right in their determination, 36% feel behind, and 18% haven't set any goals. But what I wanted to hit is that when it comes to elections, it's so interesting, and you and I, Bruce, have been in this a long time, but over the long term, stocks have tended to move up regardless of whether it was a Republican, a Democrat, whoever wins in the White House. Primary seasons tend to be a little bit more volatile, but markets have always tended to bounce back strongly afterwards. Anxious investors often move to the sidelines during election years. What a bad idea. But staying on the sidelines have not been a great strategy over and over. Can't say that that's going to be in the future, but the S&P 500 had negative returns in only 2 out of the last 20 election years, and those 2 years were 2000 and 2008. So we can't emphasize enough that hopefully you have confidence in the plan and the allocation that you have now, and you're not going to make any changes based on these current events. We've just said that over and over and over. How do you get this survey? So on our website, if you go to wealthenhancement.com/yourmoney, so wealthenhancement.com/yourmoney, there's a tab on there that says Insights. And this time when you click on Insights, you go to Blog. And then you have to scroll down a little bit. And the name of this is Now and Later, 8 in 10 Americans Worry About Election Impact. And they also do then feel somewhat optimistic about their long-term lifestyle. So it's a short read. It's a five-minute read. We've condensed it for you. So wealthenhancement.com/yourmoney. Click on Insights on the top and hit Blog, and then if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see it. And you don't have to put your name in there. You don't have to put where you live. You don't have to put your phone number. I feel like they did a good job, Bruce, of, you know, taking kind of the highlights of the survey for the website. Bruce?
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I guess there was no huge surprises, a couple minor surprises, but very interesting. And again, if people can get use out of this to help themselves dig in, go get this information. I think it's useful and helpful. And I have nothing else to add. Susie, let's let listeners take us home.
All right, 651-461-9226. Texter writes, how often does Wealth Enhancement do you encourage your advisors to meet or touch base with clients as if you're a customer?
Peg, this is a really good question because let's be honest, you know, full disclosure, financial advisors or the financial services industry is not necessarily well known for great customer service. I can't tell you, Peg, over my 40 plus year career, how many times I've heard somebody say something to the effect that, yeah, my advisor called me all the time in the beginning, and then once I invested with them, now I never hear from them anymore, or something to that effect. Talk a little bit about our business operation and our standard operating procedure with regard to reviews for clients at Wealth Enhancement.
Yeah, I'll tell you right off the bat, we take that very seriously to the point where we have developed our own software within our firm, and our compliance or the officers that keep track of, you have to click a box on the computer that says, okay, I've offered a review, they've either taken it or have declined. And so it's kind of a fun game as far as I was concerned, because you just want a check mark on every single box. And so we do that on an annual basis where we reach out to you. And more times than not, you're going to take us up on it, right? Because if you ever have come for a review, you'll know that there's more than just watching your statements and seeing if the values are up or down. We're a financial comprehensive planning firm. So there's so many things that outside of just how is your money doing, it's all the things around you that you can improve upon. So once again, Wealth Enhancement Group is a registered investment advisory and offer reviews on an annual basis. Some clients actually come in a couple times a year because they have more complexity that we can't get all the comprehensive planning done in one meeting. Oftentimes we'll have two meetings. Bruce?
Yeah, I can't really add to that, but other than to say that, you know, this service, these review meetings are so important, and there's a lot of reasons why that's true. But I think one of the big ones, we're talking today about this survey and, you know, retirement income planning, which again, at the risk of seeming self-serving, is standard operating procedure for us, and not everybody in our space does this. In fact, a lot of money managers and a lot of people in our space really would rather their clients not spend the money. They'd rather they just leave it invested with them because they make more money if the money stays invested. But we certainly understand that the reason you save and invest and put away money for your future is so that you can retire someday and you can turn those investments into an income to replace your paycheck because you're not working anymore. We will help you do that the smartest way possible. We will help you decide the best way to spend your money. It's retirement income planning. And the best money to spend this year might not be the best money 6 months from now, which is one of the many reasons why getting together with your advisor at least once a year, or as Peg said, some clients even more often than that, there's a lot of reasons to do it, but I think that's one of the biggest ones is, are you on the right track with regard to your spending, especially if you're retired or you're close to being retired? That's a big reason to talk to your advisor frequently. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. That is the number to jump in if you're listening and you have a question about your retirement. A texter writes, is it okay to freeze my credit? Freeze credit, TransUnion, Experian, Equifax, and keep frozen indefinitely. That's the whole text.
Yeah, I think, Peg, the reason for that text, the reason people would do that is if they're worried about having their identity breached or having their identity stolen. Freezing your credit is, I think, one of the ways to prevent that. Have you ever done that, or what, do you know much about that?
I do, in that, excuse me, we get that question often. And, you know, a lot of the clients that we work with, they don't have any reason to have credit anymore. And that's kind of how this came up over the, you know, I would say maybe the last 3 to 5 years, is why do I need the credit number, or, you know, why do I need all these companies, which is Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion? Why do I need my name on there? And I would actually say it's a really good idea to freeze. And I think it's getting worse as far as our identity being taken and, you know, just the bad actors out there. So can you then open it up again? I would think so. I haven't assisted a client in trying to open it again. There was just no reason, because they're just not borrowing money. They're debt free. And so I would go ahead and freeze it if it would make you feel better.
All right, Bruce.
Yeah, I actually I'll use myself as the example. I froze mine one time, and then I decided I wanted to unfreeze it because I was going to go buy a second home in Florida, and I wasn't going to pay cash. And it was, I don't remember why, but I do remember it was more onerous or more labor intensive or kind of a bigger pain than I thought it would be to unfreeze. And now I've never refrozen it again. But Peg, you make a great point. If your borrowing days are behind you, you're not going to buy any big ticket items where you need to go get a loan. I agree. Just freeze it. And there's all kinds of services out there to help protect you. And I got to say that the banks and the credit card companies do a really good job. It is not uncommon where a charge of mine does not go through because it seems suspicious to them, and I'll get an email and say, hey, did you actually try to do this? So they're watching out for us. But in a world today with 24/7 hackers and mobs doing, you know, trying to infiltrate and steal identity and scams, and, you know, you can't do too much to try to protect yourself. So Peg, you make a great point. If you know you're never going to need to borrow money again, I don't see any reason not to freeze it. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, please feel free to jump in. This texter writes, I'm turning 73 in 2025. How long can I wait before I take my first RMD? Maybe explain what an RMD is first and then explain when to take it.
Yeah, thank you, Susie. You're right, because a lot of listeners might not know RMD stands for required minimum distribution. And Peg, I got to tell you, and I'm going to throw it to you, but just to kind of set you up here, the current seminar, and I did start my fall speaking engagement, so I've been out on the road a couple times already. And this is coming up a lot. There's still a lot of confusion about RMDs, how they work, what, you know, what accounts do I have to do this? How do I figure out what it is? And just a lot of misunderstanding about it I've discovered in a couple speaking events already. So required minimum distribution, Peg, let's start with, what is it and when do you have to take it and what accounts do you have to take it from?
Yeah, it's a little confusing because they've changed the age a couple different times here in the last few years. So it used to be 70 and a half, and then they changed it to 72 or something like that. Well, anyway, now it's 73. So in 2025, and actually 2024 as well, but 2025 is the question here, your required minimum distribution doesn't need to be taken out until April 15th, or April 1st of 2026. What's interesting about that is if you do delay it, because that's the question, how long do you have before you need to take it? Well, technically it's April 1st of 2026. Well, if you do delay it that long, then you would need to take two required minimum distributions in 2026. So most of our clients would get that money out in 2025 by December 31st. Now, if you have multiple IRAs, so let's just say you have three different IRAs and they're with three different custodians, you have the luxury of being able to look at the required minimum distribution on all three of those accounts, and then you can choose where do you want to take the distribution from. Long time ago, it was mandated that you take a percentage from each one. They have changed that. So you're able to just pick and choose where you want to take it from. So I'll give you a real life case in that right now the stock market is doing very, very well. So when people are asking about the required minimum distributions and they have to take it this year by December 31st, in many times we're suggesting that they take it out of the stock market versus their money market or versus their bond side because the stock market's at an all-time high. Now, are they going to – some people use that money. You know, some people just go and reinvest. But unfortunately, you have to pay the Uncle Sam on the percentage that's due in taxes, and then you can reinvest the other money. So hopefully that helps with just a couple of, pinpoints of when you have to take it. Most clients take it by December 31st. But what I also would tell you is don't call someone and ask them for the check at the custodian on December 31st because it takes processing time. So we ask our clients for a couple weeks ahead in December if you're looking to take it out that late in the year. Bruce?
Peg, that was really good. I'm just going to add a couple of things. So again, if it wasn't clear, this RMD or this required minimum distribution applies to accounts like traditional IRAs, traditional 401ks, or any account 457, 403b, where you got a deduction for the contribution. You've been allowed to not pay any taxes on the gains. You've got no 1099s. Now Uncle Sam is basically saying, look, we want to collect the taxes on those dollars, and we're not going to wait any longer. Age 73, we want you to start to take those withdrawals. It's based on, and Peg gave a really good example, you might have three different IRAs. So let's say in 2025, you turn 73 and you've got required minimum distribution. How do you know how much? Well, it's a percentage, and it's actuarial science. It's based on your statistical life expectancy. So it's a certain percentage. It's about 3.5% at age 73. But the older you get, that number, that percentage keeps going up. And Peg, I've got this question at the seminars. What about the changing account balance because the ups and downs of the stock market? So the IRS picks a date. So if you need to take a required minimum distribution in 2025, it's based on the December 31st, 2024 value. Whatever happens in January or February or March doesn't matter. It's based on December 31st, 2024 value. So at Wealth Enhancement, we actually proactively do these calculations for our clients. We tell them, don't worry about your RMD. We'll tell you, number one, when you have to take one. Number two, how much you have to take. And number three, where you should take it from. Because as Peg mentioned, you could have multiple accounts and you have to add all of them together to figure out what your RMD is, but you don't have to take disbursements from all of them. And there might be one that makes more sense than the other. So we do that automatically for our clients. One other quick point, Peg, you mentioned that you don't have to take it in 2025, but if you don't, you have to take two in 2026. The question came up this last week. Why would anybody do that? If you're gonna, you know, if you're doubling up in 1 year, doesn't that increase the chances that you might have to pay more tax on it? And the answer is, I've had situations before where a client was still working either full or part-time at age 73, the first year that they hit RMD, but they're not going to be working the next year. So their income is going to go down dramatically. So they don't want to take that RMD in the first year where they still had earned income from their job, and they might be paying, you know, at 22 or 24 cents on the dollar. But if they wait a year, they might pay at 12 cents on the dollar if they double them up in the next year. So there are times where that absolutely does make sense. Susie, do we have time to sneak in one more?
We do. Let's do this one. A person actually called in and had Charlie take down his question. The person writes that that between he and his wife, they are in their late 70s, and they have $2 million, and they want to help their kids with this money, but they're not sure where to put the money, what vehicle to put it in, what to do with it to make sure it's there and ready for their kids. So that's the question.
Peg, they're going to do some gifting. What would you advise them?
Yeah, you can. What you can do is each person can gift $18,000 this year. So if it's a husband and wife, you can do 2 times $18,000. You can also go over that amount, and then you'd have to fill out a form with the IRS telling them that you use some of your lifetime credit. And so you could give away as much as you want. You could give away all $2 million if you wanted to. I'm sure you don't. But then the next thing is if you're going to gift, you have a couple choices. You can put that money in an account. You could put it in an irrevocable trust where you place it in there. It would be off your ledger. You wouldn't own it anymore, but you transfer it to a trust. That just means that you don't want them to have the money right now. You may want them to have the money when you pass away. If you want them to have the money right now, you can actually just write a check. You could transfer assets that you have, stocks, bonds, real estate, cash. You can transfer things to your the kids right now, too. And so what I would recommend is that you see an attorney, an estate attorney that could help you design something or give you some guidance. Or if you're working with a financial advisor, they can give you guidance on, can you afford to do it? Or how much can you do? Do we feel that you could give away now and still live the lifestyle that you want to live?
Bruce? All right. Bruce, we're out of time.
Everyone have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Okay. Remember, if you didn't get your question answered, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Or 1-888-6-ADVICE. Make it a great week. We'll see you next time.